are you? How are you? Y'all were a late arriving crowd, but y'all got here. That was good. Well, the podium's back. Jonathan, thank you. It's Jonathan's idea because Jonathan is well known as the best dresser on our staff. And he told me that I would look much better. See, I mean, who else would think about, look, watch. Everybody in the world is now going to start carrying their sunglasses on the back of their collar. Watch. Mark my words. A trend will now begin nationwide, worldwide. Mark my word. Jonathan, we got it, right? It's a new one. It's a new trend. It's going to start. It actually is. I don't have any doubt about it. Well, we're glad you're here today. Thanks for the kind of doing this. We're kind of reconstructing the stage, which is a good thing, and kind of in the middle of that. So you'll probably see something a little bit newer up here. Well, a lot newer up here in the next couple of weeks. We are looking forward to that. I know some of these things I'm going to remind you of at the end of the service today, but I want to tell you about three things, and I want to make sure that you know about them and that you participate in these. The first thing is this. One of the founders of our church, our founding elder, is a guy named Doug Palmer. Now, Doug, close your ears. Okay, put your hands over your ears. Hands over your ears, okay. Now, Doug's birthday is Thursday. It's his... Doug, close your ears. It's his 80th birthday, okay? Now that in itself, now listen, you're all invited to a birthday party for Doug here on campus, 6:30, Thursday night in the teen bay, okay? You got that? All right, we're going to honor Doug. We're going to tell Doug stories, okay? And I have got a few of those because a few of us have known him, you know, as long as I have, but I've known him a long time. So Terry, we're going to have some barbecue and some chicken. And Terry said, you know, if y'all bring some stuff, just kind of help out, that kind of thing. But it's Thursday on his birthday. We thought, when do we do this? Well, you know, what better time to do it for a big birthday like this than on the birthday itself, right? I mean, if you all can interrupt and hijack a whole service, right, for my 50th, we can do this. We can do this for Doug's 80th, right? So we'll send you some email reminders out, but we want you to come by. Even if you can drop by just for a little bit, just to say hi. No gifts. They're insistent on that. Terry is, but Doug says if you want to bring them, that's okay. Doug is the one who's insistent about that. Please do not bring anything. Just come and share in the joy that so many of you and so many others that will be here in the second service have been touched by Doug's influence, his ministry, et cetera. It's just been a beautiful thing. So that's Thursday night. That's a big deal. Sunday night's another big deal. We're really excited because we're going to do Integrity Night over at the Burlington Indians, Royals. Don't ever be the Royals to me. It's always the Indians. Actually, I remember the Senators' days. I remember the Senators, right? That's what I tend to think of them. Yeah, and so... So we're gonna have that. Now that's gonna start. Doors are gonna open at 5:00. Now your admission's free, okay? Integrity folks, we've already taken care of your admission. You're gonna be able to get in free. We're gonna have picnic area open for us. $7 a pop gets you all the food you can eat, okay? Hot dogs, pizza, popcorn, chips, whatever they serve over there, and all the food and the drink. And you're gonna see. Now here's what I'm really looking forward to. Todd Felkel throwing out the first pitch. All right. Stephen Potts and company singing God Bless America during the middle of the game. All right. And then some other pregame songs as well. My real question is, and we're going to have a pool on this. Mark Clapp and Mike Ward are going to coordinate this, okay? As to whether Todd's going to choke, whether he's going to throw it like, you know, 50 feet instead of the 60 feet, or if he's going to make it all the way, okay? You and Mark got it, Mike, okay? Y'all see these two guys. And one on each side in the back, and they'll take care of the pool for you. Is Todd going to choke, or is he going to make it all the way to the glove? Or is he going to overthrow? You know, is he going to overthrow? That's the big thing. Huh? The bishop's got an arm. He says he does. He's been doing this all week. He has. See there? He just started involuntarily like this. And I'm a little bit concerned with him doing that, but he's already getting ready for it. So... I'm real pumped up about that to see how he's going to do that and see now Stephen, you know, is he going to do? Is he going to like hit a clunker, you know, or is he going to nail it? You know, what's going to happen? You know, we'll just have to see. He might wind up Milli Vanilli in it. I don't know. And just kind of do the lip sync thing just to make sure. As long as I'm singing it, he said he'd do it. Right. So, uh, We're going to have the game. Look, you're going to love seeing Rick Martin and Jonathan Day doing that dizzy bat race. Okay? Can you imagine what that's going to look like, what that's going to be like? Huh? Can you imagine that? And we're going to have all your children involved. Your children are going to run the bases. They're going to do stuff with bingo and all that good stuff. So you don't want to miss that. Your admission's free. There'll be a table there where you can pay the $7. And we'll remind you again next Sunday. But go ahead and put it on your calendar for next Sunday evening, August 29th. That's their last regular season game. And we're going to have just a really, really good time. I think there's one more thing I need to talk about. And I can't remember what it was. But how can, you know, with those two things, that's big. I'll figure it out, and we'll get it for you by the end of the service, okay? Your what's up's there. Read through that. There are a number of things that we want you to know about that's also a lot of fun. And we're going to start this new series, okay? The big thing that I remember about the Purple People thing was the old Minnesota Vikings defense. Remember that? Back in the days of Alan Page and Carl Eller and guys like that were anchoring the defensive line. Fran Tarkenton was the quarterback. And very few of you remember the one I'm talking about, but trust me, it happened. It did. And the Purple Peter People Eaters. Well, we're going to talk about a Purple People leader whose name was Jesus. And we're going to talk today and in the next few weeks about what it means to really amp up your leadership. Because I really believe that God's called all of us to be leaders in some facet of life. We've talked about that before, so I'm not going to belabor that point. But here's what I want to tell you. I want to be honest with you and be brutally honest with you up front. What's the purpose of our service, of our series that we're going to be working on here in the next few weeks? We need leaders. The church, God's kingdom, needs leaders. It needs people who are going to be willing to take charge and to learn new skills and to employ those skills and to deploy those skills and to help others understand what it means to be all that they can be for themselves and for whatever their purpose is in life. I really believe that your purpose in life is to lead. I really believe that in some facet of life. And I believe that when we bring that into the church, all of us have some type of role. We should all be able to look over our shoulders and see somebody following us for the right reasons. We talked a couple of weeks ago about the whole issue of moral authority, right? And we talked about moral authority being the real reason, the real foundation, the basis for being followable, right? For leadership. And so how are you doing in your life? I do know that what we're going to talk about, the principles we're going to talk about in this series are going to help you get, I believe, a really good handle on that. Now, there are four things, at least, that I'm going to roll out today. And we're in the process, elders, pastors, staff, we're all kind of in the process of rolling out, figuring out what is it that God's really got in store for us this church year. Because we kind of look at our church year as kind of, it's synonymous with the school year, September to August, and we're about to kick off a new one. What are some of the things that we really need to be focused on and doing this year? And, you know, you've kind of seen the three things, our main missional thrust that God has us up to, the powerful weekend celebrations, the authentic connections, and engaging our strengths. And, you know, within the context of that, I've got three or four of these things that we're going to be really focusing on this year that I want to tell you about today. And I'm going to set that up for you because in order for us to see God do what he wants to do, you know what, some of us have really got to step up. All of us have got to step up. We've got to say, you know what, it's time for me to take a step of courage, maybe, if that's what it takes. For some of you, it might be the natural progression into the next step. But whatever you're doing today, we all need to step it up. Here's some of the things that we want to look at next year. One of the phrases you're going to hear a lot is this: attract, connect, and retain. You know, I've told you, I said, you know, if everybody that ever attended Integrity Church were still here, we would have a church of about, you know, 20,000 people, it seems like, you know. And, you know, people come and they'll, you know, what really, I get really excited because I see a lot of newcomers, particularly in the second service, because typically people that come first time come a little bit later, right? That's typically what happens. And a lot of you all who come to the first service don't see a lot of the new folks, but there are a bunch of them that particularly come in the second service. But what really breaks my heart is when I don't see them come back. You see, and they don't come back. Why? Because we haven't, part of the reason is, and it's, maybe our church is just not for them, and that's okay. We're not for everybody, and that's cool. We understand that. But, you know, when they don't come back because we fail to make a touch, we fail to make a connection, we kind of stay in our own little cliques. You know, sometimes I'll come up to you and I'll say, okay, break it up, break it up, break it up. You know, that's a sign that, hey, there are other people out there that need you to touch them, okay? And you're going to hear that break it up kind of deal more in the coming year, okay? Because why? Because we want to attract, we want to connect people, we want to retain them. Look, people are not looking for a friendly church so much as they are looking for friends. You see, I can be as friendly as I want to be, but that doesn't necessarily make me a good friend. It doesn't mean that I want to be a friend, right? People are looking for friends. And the problem is when people who already have friends in a particular context are there, they tend to forget that. We're not pursuing friends, but we should all be pursuing new friends every week and every Sunday morning. You know, that's what we want you to do. We want you to invite people out to the Indians game next week. We want you to bring them out. You know, hey, bring folks out to Doug Palmer. I don't know Doug Palmer. Well, bring them out anyway. You know, Doug said, I'll meet them. I like them. Yeah, yeah. Right, Doug? Anybody? Yeah, we'll put it in the paper, you know, front page kind of deal. Might be an expensive ad, but, you know, we want to do this. We want to attract. We want to do a better job of attracting, connecting, and retaining. And in our connect and grow focus, this is part of that authentic connections that we do. That missional thrust, that's what we're talking about here. Here's another one, fund and go. In our missions, in our reach world, we've kind of stepped back from this idea of everybody going. Now, we do some stuff. We do Operation Christmas Child. Our students kind of did a really cool mission trip last week where things went really well. We're going to hear some more about that. But, you know, we really want to step it up for all ages to understand that not only do we want to fund work through our EMO and other items, but we want to go. We want to start pushing you back out there. One of the things that we did when the economy tanked, we said, you know, it's kind of hard for people to go. But you know what we kind of realized? The economy ain't coming back around anytime soon, y'all. Okay? So that's the new reality. So we got to learn how to live into it. So we're going to get back into this going thing where we actually go. We push you to go. We want to see our adults who are growing. We want to see everybody take some type of a mission or reach type trip or something, whether it be locally, whether it be regionally, whether it be foreign. I don't know what it's going to look like. And this is just stuff we're going to start that's not only going to be in the coming church year, but also beyond that. So you may not see every one of these things just hit all of a sudden at one time. Here's another thing. We want to make missionaries of all ages in our church. Missionaries of all ages. We want our children, we want our students, we want our adults, everybody to go out and understand what it means to go beyond this campus and to make a difference out in the community, out in the world. For example, we do mission trips that are regional or that are domestic or that are international. Guess what we're going to do? We're going to do the same stuff we're going to do on that mission trip here locally first. We're going to do that. Because why? I've heard it all the time. Me as a pastor, been doing this, how many years now? 17 years, I guess, or so. Well, you know, we got all this stuff going on around us that we could use that, you know, we need to be doing. You know what? That's exactly right. So it's not that we should not do stuff domestically and regionally. We should do them both, right? So we're going to make missionaries of all ages. Our students and our age-graded ministries are going to be challenged to do more of that. We're going to develop young leaders. We want to put a new emphasis on our 18 to 30-year-olds this year. And that's single adults as well as married couples. We're going to do some things that we haven't done before. And I'm going to be talking to a group of them here in the next couple weeks to try to figure out some of the things that we can specifically do to drive them. Not so that they can just have a place to come together. That's a cool thing. That's great. We're going to do that. But also to help them to develop as leaders. Because you know what? We can develop our traditions ourselves, can't we? Pretty quickly. And if you look around the room, a lot of y'all look like me and older. And a few of you are younger. But most of y'all are older, right? But yeah, I'm just playing. But you know, we can develop our traditions and we can forget about those who are coming along behind us. So we don't want to do that. So we want to provide a forum for those folks to do that. So here's another thing I want to tell you about. Following the principles that we're going to talk about in this Purple People Leader series, which is going to be based in John chapter 6. It's a natural progression in our study of John because Jesus, I think, one of the things that comes out in John 6 and in the corresponding stories in Matthew 14 and in Luke and all is that we see leadership here. We see servanthood, we see followership, and we see leadership. And we're going to focus on that. I'm going to tell you what's going to happen, what can happen if you heed, if you take heed of, and if you live into these principles that we're talking about in this particular series. Now, I hope they're going to make you uncomfortable. And our goal is to make you uncomfortable. Because discomfort often is the necessary prerequisite for people doing something differently. Does that make sense? Almost always. And so what is it? What are some of these things? The first one, Ron, show us that first one there. Following these principles will help you enhance your personal influence. If you follow these principles, if you take them to heart, your personal influence will expand. I don't have any question about that. And well, I don't know if I really want my personal influence to expand. Well, you know, if you don't want it to expand, something's not right. Something's not right. Secondly, what else will happen? It will ease your stress level and will bring confidence to you. I really believe that self-confidence and stress are diametrically related. They're inversely related. When people have low self-confidence, their stress level goes up. Low self-confidence also so often comes about because I don't understand what it is that God wants from me. Now, when we say I don't really understand what God wants from me, that means, number one, I haven't learned to listen to God. And number two, I haven't learned how to obey Him. Now, I caught those two on a message from Charles Stanley I was listening to on the radio yesterday. So those are definitely not original. I got to give Charles definite credit for those two. Excellent point. We don't listen to God, and we're not willing to obey and trust Him. One of the things he said also I thought was really cool. We've got to learn that let me see what I didn't write it down. Let me see what he said. It was really cool. He said, we've got to learn that God will always be the one responsible for the outcomes of our obedience. And you know what we do? We try to take that responsibility for that uncertainty on ourselves. And we don't acknowledge that God is the one who promises to be responsible for the outcomes when we live in obedience. You see, so often we kind of put pressure on ourselves because we think, oh my goodness, if I do A and C happens, then all hell's going to break loose and it's going to be bad for me. But you know what? If A is in the context of obeying God and C happens and all hell breaks loose, guess who's really responsible for that? God is. God is. He promises that in His Word. He's responsible for the consequences when we truly obey, when we truly trust and obey. So here's another thing. There's a third thing that'll happen. This will bring greater sense of spiritual and emotional fulfillment to your life. Your peace, you'll be more peaceful. You'll have a greater sense that, hey, this thing called God's will become less of a mystery to you. Okay? Because for many people, God's will is the most mysterious concept that they ever have considered in their lives. So when you bring into your life these principles that we're going to be talking about in this Purple People Leader series, things will be different in your life. Now, if you just come and you kind of take your notes and all that stuff and kind of shove it in your Bible and, you know, leave it on the, you know, like when we clean the church and all, you know, we find some of your, you know, your outlines filled out and everything. Oh, they did a great job of taking notes. That was great. But they left their notes here. You know, we got to take this and live into it. You know, do like the gentleman who emailed me a couple of weeks ago, a manager who goes to our church, and he said, Bud, can I have your outline? Because I want to share that verbatim with my people at work. He supervises a group of about 600 people. He said, I want to take that. I want to use that. That's how you drive the principles that God gives us into your life. I would love for you to take this stuff to work. And you know what? Just get a group of people together for lunch and talk about Jesus' leadership principles. Okay? Don't say our pastor did this. I don't need the credit. Just mark my name off. I didn't, you know, this is all, you know, God wrote this stuff, not me. Just take it and share it with them. And see how your influence itself can begin expanding and exploding. I say that because everybody needs what we're talking about over the next few weeks. Everybody needs what you're talking about, what we're talking about over the next few weeks. And I said this earlier, the basis for all leadership is moral authority. And we talked about moral authority 2 weeks ago before Todd came up and dazzled you last week with an incredible message, as he always does when I'm out of here. And thank you, because we moved our daughter in last weekend, and you know that I was probably an emotional wreck then. So coming back to speak would not have been a productive thing for us. But moral authority is all about the responsible Christ-following individual living a life of freedom to make intelligent decisions and choices in the best interest of those in his or her sphere of influence. And if you didn't catch that message, go back to that one. If you didn't catch Todd's last week, go back and go to our website and pull down the sermons. Our web gurus have given us a great way to access prior messages, and you can hear the audio and pull up the notes as well. So do that so you'll know what we're talking about. It's a precursor into this message series that we're getting into today. We okay with that? We good with it? Ready to dive into it? All right, got your Bibles? Go to actually Matthew 14. But I thought you were talking about John. Well, the main two events that we see in John chapter 6, Jesus feeding the 5,000 plus, and Jesus walking on the water, which also we know through Matthew's account, Peter walking on the water. These are basically recorded in all four Gospels in some form or fashion. So I'm going to take Matthew chapter 14, because I believe that that particular account gives us perhaps the most complete picture as if we would have been there actually on the hillside and in the next couple of weeks out on the water with Jesus and his disciples. As a matter of fact, we've talked about this before. All four gospel writers had different perspectives, right? I mean, if they all wrote the same thing, three of them would not have been necessary, right? Makes sense? And so they all wrote from their own different perspective, their own unique perspective. So the beauty of the Gospels is they each bring out things that the others don't. And when you see these stories that are recorded in multiple Gospels, what you do is this. You go and you pull them all together to get a complete picture. So that's what we're going to try to do today. But our base passage is going to be in Matthew chapter 14, beginning at verse 13. So I'm going to start there. As soon as Jesus heard the news. Now, what news did he hear? He had heard the news. Does anybody know? John the Baptist had just been executed by Herod. Had just been, and they'd off with his head, right? Now, here's the deal in this whole thing. Herod had a birthday banquet. For who? Huh? Actually for himself, right? And so what happened was, now his daughter, here's how the daughter came in. His stepdaughter, whose name was, you remember her name? Salome, not Salami, Salome, all right? Salome was a beautiful girl, and you know, actually Herod most likely lusted after her. And so the mother, the queen, knew this, and she really wanted John to take it on the chin, or under the chin, literally, right? Because what John had done, he had continually just came at them because of the adulterous nature in which the relationship between Herod and the queen had begun. He had basically stolen her from his brother, for the most part. And there had been an affair and that kind of thing. And so John condemned that. And so she wanted John to be totally taken care of. And so she said, Salome can dance for him and do a real seductive dance. And while he has had this, he has this alcohol in him, I can get him to do whatever I want him to do. So what happens? She does the dance and he says, "You're so wonderful, Salome. Anything you want, I will give to you." And what does she say? With the head of John on a platter. Exactly. And so Herod then realizes, oh my goodness, I went too far. You see, Herod didn't want to kill John. Herod, in a really unique, kind of strange way, it appears, actually kind of respected and maybe even liked John. He didn't want to do this. But he realized that he had already kind of put up this proclamation in front of who? Everybody that was at the party. And so he felt like he had no choice, and so John was beheaded. So Jesus hears about the news in Matthew chapter 14, verse 13. So he left in a boat to a remote area to be alone. But the crowds heard where he was headed, and they followed on foot from many towns. Jesus saw the huge crowd as he stepped from the boat, and he had compassion on them and healed their sick. That evening, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a remote place and it's already getting late. Send the crowds away so that they can go to the villages and buy food for themselves." But Jesus said, "That isn't necessary. You feed them." "But we have only 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish," they answered. "Bring them here," he said. Then he told the people to sit down on the grass. Jesus took the 5 loaves and 2 fish, looked up toward heaven, and blessed them. Then, breaking the loaves into pieces, he gave the bread to the disciples, who distributed it to the people. They all ate as much as they wanted, and afterwards the disciples picked up 12 baskets of leftovers. About 5,000 men were fed that day, in addition to all the women and children. Now, this particular story is found in all the Gospels. We are going to cover it today and next week to derive some truth out of it and to get a grasp on what Jesus was trying to say to the disciples through this event and what he's trying to say to us. So, what are we going to talk about today? Well, let's look at some fundamentals of great leadership. Now, spring of 29, this was the year in which this happened. Still very early in what we know as the year of opposition. As a matter of fact, the crucifixion would be about a year away from this event. We'd be a year out from it, or a year back from it. And we see some things that Jesus did. His popularity, as you can well tell from the account we just read, was still very, very strong with the masses. Everybody wanted to be around this guy. They knew that there was something there that they wanted a part of. They saw him work miracles. They saw him teach with wisdom that was just beyond anything they had ever heard before in their lives. And so people listened to him. They followed him. And so Jesus had to find ways to get away. Here's the first principle that we see of great leaders. It's a fundamental that I call self-management. Self-management. Great leaders first take care of themselves so that they can be productive. Matter of fact, when you're on a plane, when you are going through the instructions before takeoff, that if the cabin loses pressure, the oxygen masks drop, right? What are you supposed to do if you're traveling with somebody else? Put yours on first. Well, but you know, I want to save such and such on it. You know, if you can't save yourself, you're not going to be any good to the person next to you who needs you, your child. Okay? So self-management is all about the fact that great leaders first take care of themselves before they can do anything for others. Now, in verse 13, as soon as Jesus heard the news, what did he do? He went off by himself in a boat to a remote area to be alone. Now, imagine that has something to do with the beach. But anyway, he went to where he could be what? Alone. He needed to be refreshed. He needed to have some downtime. He knew what he needed. And so he tries to go away. Now, obviously we know from reading the text that it wasn't a very successful attempt, right? Because everybody tried to follow him. They did follow him. But he might have gotten a little bit of rest time. He might have got a little bit of R&R in. We're not real sure because the way the events are compressed for the benefit of the text. And so as soon as he heard the news, he went off by himself in a boat to a remote area. But the crowds heard where he was headed and followed by land from many villages. The word had spread. Now, Jesus had just done some pretty cool miracles, right? We talked about them. We saw them, right? As we've been talking in John so far. And so what happened was he was trying to get away. Now, here's the point about self-management. Self-management is a discipline that must be intentionally built into your life. It must become a regimen. R-E-G-I-M-E-N. It must become a regimen. Let me give you a little advertisement right here. Todd Felkel is going to be leading a class called 201. It's where we talk about building healthy spiritual habits. It's going to start as soon as this service is over today, down in the conference center. It is all about helping you build a healthy spiritual regimen in your life, giving you some tools. Let's face it, so many of you, you're kind of like, man, I believe this is true about a lot of Christ followers, sincere Christ followers. Man, I know I got to do something. I just don't know what to do. And that's okay, But you know what? We want to help you figure out what to do. We want to give you some tools. That's what Todd's going to be working on. So even if you haven't signed up for that class, you don't have anything to do after this service today. It's Sunday morning. Don't tell me you got a busy schedule like at 10:15 or 10:30. Go to the class, and even if you haven't signed up, Todd will take you. All right? Todd will definitely take you. I don't know where he'll take you, but he'll take you. All right? But go to the class and begin the work towards self-management, a healthy spiritual regimen of habits that will help you know what to do. What is your regimen? If I were to go, if we were to do the Mr. Microphone kind of thing, and Stephen were to take a microphone around and interview you and film you and ask you, what is your spiritual regimen? How many of you would be able to give him an answer? Don't raise your hand. How many of you would be able to give him an answer that is honest, okay, and that is in keeping with true self-management? You see, if your answer, if you just kind of got real uncomfortable when I asked that question, you got some work to do here. Because you're not doing a good job of self-management. I'll tell you that right now. And the people that depend on you for leadership, and you know what? The fact of the matter is you don't even know who they are yet. You don't even know who the people are until you make a conscious decision to take a step in that direction. You will never know the people that are missing out on your influence unless you take a step towards self-management and say, I'm going to do something. God, I am going to do something. In the second part of this passage, we're going to talk about what it means to step out of the boat. So you kind of get a feel for where we're going. Some of you, if you don't show up for the next few weeks, I'll know what happened. All right. So self-management has got to become a regimen. It must. Now, different people have different energy levels. Self-management is also about pacing ourselves. Pacing ourselves. Now, can I tell you something about pacing yourself? You got to be doing something worthwhile to worry about pacing it in the first place. Does that make sense? Pacing yourself means nothing if you're doing nothing. It's irrelevant to your life. Energy levels are different for different people. Pace of life is different for different people. We were enjoying the last week before we knew we had to take our middle child off to college a couple of weeks ago. And we had actually sent our youngest, our 9-year-old, away on a children's retreat with a local church. They take all their children and children, whoever wants to go, other churches, whatever. They go to a camp. They went all the way to Hendersonville on the western side of the state, right? And so Katie goes with them, and so we're enjoying our time together, Tammy and I, and, you know, kind of getting ready to move our older daughter, her older sister, in. And so we get a call on Tuesday after she had left on Sunday. And Tammy calls me, and she says, well, you know, Katie's got a little bit of a fever. They wanted us to know that. I said, okay, well, keep me posted. She calls back a few minutes later, and she says, Katie started throwing up. A while ago, she said she didn't want to come home, didn't want us to come after, but now she's a little scared. And so she calls me a few minutes later and said a couple of nurses who were there on the trip to kind of, you know, chaperone and such, think that Katie might need to go to the hospital. So we, you know, hop in the car real quickly and drive up, and 5 hours away, we, you know, catch her. She's in the hospital. We stay over the night and bring her back. She was dehydrated. That's cool. Not really cool, but my health insurance plan is not that great, so it's really not cool. The cool thing is that she's great. The cool thing is that she's fine now, all right? But here's the point. They were telling us, you know what we noticed about Katie? While everybody else, all those other kids, it was like 95 degrees even in the mountains. And she said, you know, they said, even while everybody else was just, you know, just giving out, all the kids, no energy, Katie kept going. She would not stop. Now, for those of you who work in children's ministry and know my daughter, that does not surprise you at all. But the point is, she had no clue how to pace herself. She'll go until she hits the wall, and boom. We went and saw Karate Kid with her last night. She made it about 2/3 of the way through the movie, and she hit a wall. She crawled in my lap, you know, and I think she only coughed the last, you know, it was a really good movie, so I kept her attention, but it was all she could do. You see, many of us don't know how to pace ourselves. My 9-year-old does not know how to pace herself. I hope she will learn. I hope she will learn for all of our benefit, yours and mine, right? But see, we all have to learn this self-management thing, and it starts at an early age. Your children will never self-manage unless they see you self-managing, mom and dad. They will never develop a regimen that will make them spiritually healthy and emotionally healthy unless they see you doing it. Now, can I tell you a little secret? You can do it, and they still may not follow you. Any of y'all ever figured that out? But you know what? I've talked to so many parents who say, you know what? I knew they would come back to it. I knew they'd come back to it. And they often do. We always want it sooner than later, right? For them to come back, but sometimes it is later than sooner. Well, the second fundamental principle of great leadership is servanthood. It's servanthood. It's a willingness to be a servant. Leaders are always externally focused on the needs of others. If you want to have the greatest influence that your life can have, you had better get your eyes off yourself. You better dispense with the poor, poor, pitiful me garbage and understand that your life was not meant for your benefit, but rather was meant for the benefit of others. A vast crowd was there. This is back in Mark. This is the Mark version, verse 34, kind of giving us a little more of a panoramic description of what happened there as Jesus was about to feed the 5,000. A vast crowd was there as he stepped from the boat, and he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. Jesus was in great need of rest, and rightfully so, he pursued that rest. We all have to pursue rest. If you don't pursue rest and take advantage of it, you will not be any good for others. You will never be a servant because you will have nothing to give. Verse 14 in Matthew 14, a similar description. A vast crowd was there as he stepped from the boat, and he had compassion on them, and he healed their sick. Jesus went to work. He had gotten a little bit of a rest, maybe. We don't know how much again. But as soon as the rest was over, guess what? He was right back in it, looking to figure out how he could benefit others. If I were to ask, if Stephen were bringing the Mr. Microphone around with the video camera, and he were to ask you this question, give me one thing that God really inspired you to do in the last week that was really in service to somebody else, a big deal. Would you have a blank stare on your face, or would you have a ready answer for him that was not fabricated? Would you make something up, or would you have something there where you wouldn't have to make it up? You see, great leaders are always focused on what we need to do for others and how they can help. Matthew 20, Jesus said this, not in this particular context, in this story, but another verse that relates to the situation. Among you, it should be quite different, he said. Whoever wants to be a leader among you must first be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must become your slave.
Well, I don't necessarily want to become a leader, bud.
Yeah, but you do want to be first.
No.
Yeah, you do. You're human. You are subject to the same internal programming, that all humans are subject to. I don't care how spiritually mature we are. We all have times when we kind of get this deal where we kind of want to be first. Most godly people I know still have that. That still pops through sometimes. It's like, you know, you can seal your driveway, your concrete, or your asphalt as much as you want, but you know what? No matter what you do, eventually, there's always going to be a little grass that's going to pop through. You ever notice that? I'm thinking, how is that grass so strong it goes through that concrete? I still don't know the answer to that, but I just know what happens. No matter how strong you are spiritually, there are going to be times when you have this desire to say, me first. Human nature is that way. Here's the third thing that we see about great leaders. The third fundamental principle. It's called responsiveness. Leaders naturally take action. They naturally take action. The most frustrating people in the world are indecisive people. We say, well, they don't make decisions. Yes, they do, because the decision not to make a decision is a decision. You have made a cut. It's not like, oh, I'm going to be open-minded. I'm going to be an independent about this. Chances are, you may be just too wishy-washy, if that's the case, to take a stand. I don't want to get involved in that. I'm above that. Maybe you're just too wishy-washy. Maybe you're just too, you don't want to take a stand. There are a number of synonyms for wishy-washy, among them cowardly. Among them, no backbone. All through the Gospels, I get this message that Jesus gave. It's kind of like between the lines, do something. Make a stand. Y'all kind of catch that too when you read the Gospels? It's there, I'm pretty sure. Leaders naturally take action. It's all about initiative for leaders. What is initiative? Initiative is simply this. It is perceiving a need and getting it done. Perceiving a need and getting it done. That's exactly what initiative is. It's the regular practice of that. Look, if you want to be a great employee, if you want to be financially successful, and you don't have initiative, and this is not something that's natural that can't be developed, it can be developed. It is a habit that can be developed. Then teach yourself how to have initiative, which is simply being aware of what's going on around you, perceiving things that need to be done, and getting them done. Now, leaders with influence often are able to do multiple things at one time by utilizing other people, by helping them understand what to do. Because guess what? Well, isn't that selfish? Shouldn't you do it yourself? No. Because the more people you can get engaged in something positive, the more investment you're making in their lives. Does that make sense? So if I can multitask, and if I can use my influence to cause other people to get engaged in accomplishing something that I see that needs to be done because it truly needs to be done, you know what? Then you're a winner and I'm a winner. Because you get to utilize the gifts and talents that God has given you. Does that make sense? Initiative. Say it with me. 1, 2, 3. Initiative. Make that a goal, to develop your initiative, being aware of what's going on, looking at the needs, perceiving needs, and doing something about the needs. Verse 14, what did we say earlier? He had compassion on them, and he healed their sick. In Mark 6, 34, also, Jesus began teaching them many things. He saw. He looked at the crowd. He looked at the crowd and he realized what they... Of course, now he was God, okay? But oftentimes, we don't have to be God in order to perceive the needs that are there with other people. Does that make sense? All of us do have an inborn ability to read people to a degree. Some are better than others. It's something we all have, but it can be developed. And as we learn to read people and perceive needs, how effective are we, how willing and eager are we to offer the help, to help do something about it? You see, Jesus, again, had just came from being alone in resting time and also being in prayer. But he came out with action. Came out with action. The fourth key fundamental of great leadership is resourcefulness. Resourcefulness. Leaders make use of whatever they have at their disposal. You see, because when you see the need, Sometimes, if you realize you need a hoe, okay, to plow a garden, don't go there with me. Don't go there with me. And you only got a rake, you got to figure out how to make the rake work. Now, if there's something off color about the word rake, somebody tell me afterwards. If you need a rake, if you got a rake and that's all you got to do the job, you know what? Figure out how to make the rake work. You got a shovel, figure out how to make the shovel work. In verses 15 and 16, that evening, which was at 3 p.m. in the afternoon. Now, there were two evenings in the Jewish day, okay? The evening was broken up into four quadrants, 3 to 6, 6 to 9, 9 to 12, 12 to 3, okay? So, right about 3 in the afternoon, because guess what? Lunchtime is now, what, 3 hours overdue, right? People are getting hungry. That evening, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a desolate place. It's getting late. Lord, we're out here in the middle of nowhere. Send the crowds away so they can go to the villages and buy food for themselves." But Jesus replied, "That isn't necessary." What does he say next? "You feed them." Jesus says, "I'm going to teach you resourcefulness. We don't have a K&W around here, or a Golden Corral, or a McDonald's. So you know what, guys? Figure it out. Figure it out." Great leaders are going to be very resourceful. Good leaders are going to be resourceful. They're going to figure out how to get things done. They're going to figure out how to get things done even when what the most obvious thing that they might need to be there is not there. In the John 6 version, Jesus saw a huge crowd of people coming to look for him. Turning to Philip, he asked, "Where can we buy bread to feed all these people?" He was challenging Philip to see if he was going to be resourceful. Jesus realized that we don't have to go elsewhere to get it. Resourcefulness is a big deal. In 1 Peter chapter 4, the Bible says that God has given gifts to each of you from His great variety of spiritual gifts. Manage them well so that God's generosity can flow through you. Manage them well. God has given you this stuff. So use it. You know what, resourceful Christian looks like? You know what the resourceful Christian looks like? They are exercising everything, every attribute, every characteristic, every personality trait, every ability that God has given them in the interest of serving other people. They do it in the church. They do it in the workplace. They do it in the school. They do it on the athletic field. They do it wherever they are. It's a holistic thing for them. It all kind of runs together. That's what resourceful people really do. The fifth and final attribute or fundamental principle we're going to look at today is something I call spontaneity. Spontaneity. What does spontaneity mean? You heard the word spontaneous? That's what it means. Spontaneity simply is this. Leaders stay ready to have positive impact at all times. They are ready when they see something at that point, they jump in and they do something. You see, here's one of the things you got to recognize. You got to be ready. If you're going to be influential, if you're going to be a leader, if you're going to be effective in your job, you cannot anticipate everything that is going to cross your path. That's where the value of spontaneity comes in. When I have the value of spontaneity as a real value for me, you know what? I expect the what? Unexpected. I expect the unexpected. That's what it means. I've got to learn to expect the unexpected. Here's what many of us do. We live in this hole, right? And if things happen that kind of are out of our comfort zone, maybe, we might look above and see the hole a little bit, and if we see something coming, we duck back down. And because here's our thoughts a lot of times. If I don't see it, it ain't there. You know what I'm talking about? If I don't see it, it ain't there. And, you know, that happens a lot, you know. Guys, here's what we do. We get a little older, right? We start maybe our slip on our diet and our exercise a little bit, and something starts happening here. And what do? We, all right, what guys, who of you have not begun to master the art of inhalation? Right? Particularly in front of the mirror after you get out of the shower, right? Because if it ain't there, guess what? If I don't see it, guess what? It ain't there. Forget about the way I look once I get out for the day. You know, you can't very well go around like this all the time. Now, you exercise it away, I guess. Put the mirror higher on the wall. That's a good idea. Yeah, I like that, Philip. That's actually a good one. We should include that one on the audio to go on the website. You put the mirror higher on the wall. That's not a bad idea. So Jesus soon saw a great crowd of people climbing the hill looking for him. And if hill's misspelled there, it's my fault. No, it's not on that one. It's on my notes. Good. Turning to Philip, he asked, Philip, where can we buy bread to feed all these people? He was doing what? He was testing Philip. For he already knew what he was going to do. The spur of the moment is going to test you. Your reaction in the moment where you have the opportunity for spontaneity is going to be a major test for you. Are you going to succeed? Are you going to pass the test? He already knew. He was testing Philip. So, do you want to enhance your personal influence? Do you want to ease your stress level and bring confidence? Do you want to bring greater sense of spiritual and emotional fulfillment to your life? My guess is that while you're sitting there right now thinking, I don't want to respond because it might be a trick question and he might pull me into something. My guess is that if you were to answer those questions honestly, I believe that every one of you would say yes. I believe you really want that. I mean, who wouldn't, right? You want to be rich? Nah, I don't really care for that. Liar, right? So what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? Enhance your personal influence, ease your stress level, bring confidence, bring a greater sense of spiritual and emotional fulfillment. What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do differently this week than you did last week? What is going to be the hallmark of a new direction, maybe, where you really begin to say, you know what, I'm kind of beginning to see this leader thing. Look, Jesus was not just talking to the disciples here. He was teaching everybody that would ever have access to reading this. Now, the Bible has a primary audience, which is basically those who would have been the contemporary readers of the day. And even a more direct audience, those who were right there when the event took place. But yet, we might be indirect, but we're still part of the audience 2,000 years later. So you can't tell me that this stuff doesn't apply to me. If you want to try to make that argument, we'll have a discussion in front of everybody next week. Because if you have a compelling case, we need to hear it. So here's the point. If this really does apply to you, what's going to be different? What are you going to do differently this week from what you did last? So we're going to pray, and I'm going to ask you just to ask God to tell you what that might be. And then, before we look up from our prayer, I want you to write it down in your outline. What it is. Write down what it is that you're going to do differently this week than you did last week in order for these five principles to become more ingrained in your life. I want you to fill your integrity connection cards out today too, everybody. And I want you to, if you got any thoughts or any comments, pushback, agreement, prayer requests, anything like that, I want you to let us know what they are on the card before you leave today. But we're going to pray right now. I'm going to ask God to give us wisdom, all of us. Because believe me, if God's kind of kicked your butt with this message today, He's already kicked mine before Sunday morning. It's already been kicked a few times over this stuff. So I hope He's kicking yours, because I don't like to be the only one that gets mine kicked. Father, God, this is a message that is important, I believe, because it's all about helping us really know how to join You to get Your work done. It's really all about the very basic purpose that we have for living. Lord, our life is not about us. It's about keeping our focus on others. Lord, it is all about taking care of ourselves so that we can be effective in helping others. Lord, it's all about understanding what it means to be ready when the opportunities come. It's about being ready and willing to expect the unexpected. So God, give us wisdom today. And Lord, in this quietness of this moment, as we just lift up this prayer, it's time of silence, will You reveal to us what You would have us do differently this week than from last week? And as God shows You that, I would just ask You, if You would, with our heads bowed and our eyes closed, of course you can open your eyes for this, to write it down on your outline. What is it that You're going to do differently this week from what You did last week? God, speak to us. Kick our fannies. If you have to. Maybe it's just a tickle that we need. Maybe it's just a whisper. Whatever it is, Lord, give it to us. Lord, thank You for the clarity that You offer in life, for the way that You do what You do so well. Thank You for all You are, and for the fact, God, that You want to bring us along, developing us into all that we can be, according to who You created us to be. For it's in Christ's name. Amen.